Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with Alexander Mark Yannis, owner of Momodai and the creator of Existential Essential XS, a cyberpunk cosmic horror tabletop RPG that is currently on Kickstarter. Alexander, welcome to the bench. How are you doing, sir?
Man, thank you so much for that introduction. I don't deserve it, man, but I really appreciate it. I'm splendid. It is a phenomenal day, and I'm just so grateful to be here with you right now, spending time with you, man. This is great.
It is awesome having you. Now, we haven't met before, but a mutual friend of ours, Kevin Levy, suggested that you come on the podcast, and when he said why, I was like, you know what, that's a great idea. He actually was listening to an episode I had, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, and I had kind of just mentioned in passing that, hey, I need to get more RPG on this podcast. We've had like two guests in our whole history here, and we need more RPG on here. I know I don't play RPG myself, but doesn't mean that we can't get some RPG on here. And he knew you and said, hey, he's got a campaign coming up. Let's get him on the podcast. I'm like, you know what, Kevin? Thanks for the suggestion, brother. So it is a pleasure to meet you. And before we kind of get started, I'd love to kind of hear the background of kind of how you got into gaming, if you're RPG, then I'm sure we're going to talk a little D&D and things like this. Where did this all begin for you?
Yeah, man. So it started a long while back, ever since I was just a little kid. The thing that got us together was always board games and role-playing. It's anything tabletop. You throw a card at us. I even remember... I know I don't mean to get too deep right now or anything, but even during times with like 9/11, when that happened, I was in New York. I was born and raised in New York. And when that happened, it was difficult to garner our attention in a way that wouldn't make everything solemn. But my father and my mother, they would pull out a board game, even in the midst of that. And they would say, let's play a game. And that always brought a smile to us. And that was just the reason. It was an excuse to get together and play a game, you know, just a reason to hang out with one another and love on one another. So that was that's kind of what started me off, is just ever since I was little, we had that, and it moved all the way forward. My pops was always into D&D, even first edition with chainmail, for anyone watching or listening who knows anything about that. The first ever edition for Dungeons and Dragons. My pops was raised on that, and he raised me on everything after that, you know, not just role players, everything.
You know, when you say, first of all, I was just in New York City like this past week. I was there for 2 days, went down there with my kid, and we went and saw a couple Broadway shows. And I'd been there a couple times before, but never, always with business, never did the touristy stuff. So we had a chance to do the Statue of Liberty. And of course we went down, paid our respects at the 9/11 Memorial. And, you know, just a couple times I just kind of paused and said, wow, like, you know, I'm from Canada. And I remember at the time, everyone remembers where they were at that time. And I just, you know, there was a few moments where I just stopped. And even if I wasn't at the memorial, I just stopped and thought, oh my gosh, I couldn't even imagine that day, yeah. You know, just the feeling, you know, for people there. And, you know, as a family, I imagine your dad would be in a position of, you know, how do I say it's going to be okay to the kids? You know, how do I add levity? You know, how do I, you know, not have them focus on the TV, the 24/7 coverage, and like, you know, what can we do, right, to get them to kind of, you know, focus on something else? And I can see how board games would fit into that. That makes, you know, so much sense, you know. And it's funny you talk. I've got a young face, but I actually was a first generation at D&D back in the 80s. I remember back then when my mom, I was playing D&D with my friends, and I was like in grade 8. And I remember having the talk with my mom, and she's like, hey, you know, I've been listening to the radio and watching TV, and I just want to make sure you're okay, you know, because I've heard there's a lot of troubled kids in this game, and, you know, I just want to make sure you're not going to harm yourself.
Satanic panic.
That was the talk at the time, right? Is that the D&D was this big thing that troubled kids got into, and that, you know, they're going to go and start sacrificing animals and all that. Like, it's just so crazy when you think back about it now, but like, that's what was going on at the time, right?
It's true. Even when I was young, it was like that, brother. Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. Different times. I love that. Speaking of which, I love that we've gotten past that point. Yeah. And now everyone, if you say you play D&D now or you play a role playing, everyone's like, oh, okay, cool. You know,
oh, I got tons of friends that play D&D all the time. Yeah. Well, I don't even know what the was it fifth generation now? What's where are we at?
Oh, yeah. Something like fifth edition. And so, yeah, it must have been. But yeah, I just remember a time when and this is really bad, but this was like the Misfits and I would go into like, you know, the basements, if you will, or the other apartments.
Yeah.
And we would, because it wasn't really exactly acceptable at that point yet.
Sure.
To be. And then I would hang out with everybody else at school. Everyone thought I was like, you know, chilling with the popular kids and everything like that. But as soon as school was over, I was like, it's time to be with my people, the nerds, because that's really where my heart always was, man. And and I'm just so glad we got out of that spot, because now it's just like, it doesn't matter who you are. Do you have fun playing tabletop games?
Yeah.
And I love that we've come to that point where it doesn't matter what you look like. It's not your skin color, your creed, your religion, doesn't matter any of that stuff. Do you like to have fun? Let's try out some Dungeons and Dragons, baby.
I think pop culture has probably brought a lot, has really helped with this, right? So if I look at like, in the best analogy I can give is like Glee, right? So Glee for singing and performing was huge, right? Like before then, you're geeks and, you know, kind of like, you know, not the popular kids would do that kind of stuff. And then it did a full cultural switch, right? Where now the popular kids are all singing and, you know, and I look at D&D and, you know, even look at, you know, most recently, what's the TV show with the from the 80s with the kids with the 80s, with the Upside Down?
Stranger Things, yeah.
Yeah, Stranger Things, yeah. And they got D&D in it, right? And I even think things like that really help kind of build the culture around this and really kind of flip it and say, okay, well, what is this? You know, maybe this isn't something that's, maybe there's some nostalgia there, or maybe it's just something I want to check out now. I'm seeing it on a TV show as well. So certainly it hasn't slowed down. And I think what is cool is that RPG is not just D&D anymore, right? RPG has gone so many different directions. Is create, like, we had somebody on the podcast, this is I think 2 years ago, their RPG was about bugs.
Like, so cool.
You were playing an insect.
Yeah.
Right, in a bug kingdom. Like, there, like, if you could think of it, there's an RPG story there. So I think that's so cool that you've been able to kind of take that world and kind of explore it and so forth. So have you been like involved in like the conventions and things like that? Like, I know Kevin, he met, I think he mentioned that you guys met at like Proto ATL or one of these. Or...
So that was one of my first actual conventions that I went to, Proto ATL.
Yeah.
I went there and I met Kevin there, and I was so lucky to find him because, you know, I was lost in the sea of talent. It was just like all these people with actual like fully fleshed out games that were phenomenal. And you could tell, as you know, this guy's an engineer. So his game is just like very technical, but at the same time intuitive. And he just found a nice little sweet spot. And here I am with like, you know, a board game I made in about a month and a half because I couldn't bring my role-playing game per some wisdom that was granted to me. So I had to come in with a board game. So I made one up for, you know, in a month and a half. And so that's what Kevin got to see for the first time. And I'm just so glad that,
how'd you find the experience? So you create is it like coming in with a board game that again, 1 month ahead of time and you're going to like, how was the reception? Did you, was it a shell shock for you or,
I couldn't believe how positive it was, brother. Like seriously, yeah. It was, like I said, it was a month and a half. So here I am thinking, I'm like, I gave it my all. I've never worked on a board game before. You know, I don't know what, because I had like mats that I created. It was like a mecha game simulator where every character, every player plays as a different role. So someone's like a pilot for the mecha and you saw everything through like a first person view mat. And so it was very unique and different. So I didn't know what the reception was going to be like. What was really cool is how accepting people were of something new and different. I really thought, I had my hesitance, admittedly, but they proved me wrong. And they were like, wow, this is so cool. Even just to look at it before they even play the game. And I'm just so grateful of this community, man, because I feel like that's what they are. They're accepting and they're very interested in new things, you know?
Yeah. Did you make changes after that? So, you know, because I mean, we're going to get into the Kickstarter in a second, which is an RPG, but with that board game, did you continue to work on it, make some adjustments based on that, that proto event or?
So actually, it was literally only meant to be played for the convention, but people were telling me, when does it come out for Kickstarter? I was like, it's not an actual game. It was literally made just for this experience. But they were telling me, they're like, if you just make this adjustment here, a little bit there, you could sell the game. You could even, I'll get you in contact with people. I was like, oh my goodness, this is overwhelming. You guys are so kind. It was so kind.
Oh, that is awesome.
It was an amazing, like I said, a tremendous experience that I didn't really expect at all. And everybody was just so welcoming. And I need to go again. You're making me want to go again. I'm not having a miss this year.
With that, so, you know, and I think we're just talking off air. I think you said there's another one coming up, which is more focused on RPG. How did those conventions kind of differ? Like, how is someone's, because there's a longer playtime, I think, with RPG. And so demoing, like, I'm just wondering how that works. I just personally, I don't know. I've never experienced that. How do you go through kind of the demo of the RPG? Is it kind of one round? Is it kind of one battle? How do you go about that?
Now, that's a great question because I've never done it before. But the truth of the matter is, this is what the guy told me, at least at the convention.
Yeah.
He told me that what's going to happen is you're going to have a 2-hour slot that you can go into the gaming room for. I'm going to be at a booth outside of the gaming room as a vendor to basically, you know, pitch things there for the game. But the focal point's really going to be that 2-hour time slot. You got to make it work. He said, I don't care if you make it into 2 separate sessions, 1 session, 4 sessions, or just time to talk after the session. He said, you do what you will with those 2 hours. It is your time to pitch the game in a way that people can interact with. So that's going to be my attempts. And I'm going to have those 2 hours every single day that I'm gaming. And then the rest of it's going to be at that booth, kind of pitching the game to people and stuff like that. So that's what he told me thus far.
And will it be Existential Essential, or is it going to be something else you're going to be demoing?
It's going to be Existential Essential. And also, my friend, he's amazing. His name is Andrew De La Cruz of Monster Games. He has some stuff that he wants me to showcase over there, which is going to be a surprise. And I'm going to go promote his work as well, because this guy has talent and I love his stuff. And he is such a kind-hearted soul. He deserves to be shown out there, and he will. He will. You just give that time.
That's cool.
Yeah, so those are the two games, Existential Essential and whatever we're promoting over there.
So where did the idea for Existential Essential come from? Like, how did you come up with this idea? When did this idea start?
So Existential Essential actually formulated in my head only after something pretty tragic, actually. So I had an amazing friend. He's a war vet, right? Mm. And he always knew that I was into nerdy stuff, and we'd always talk nerdy stuff, even as kids before he went into the military a long while back. And he always told me, he said, what are you doing GMing games? What are you doing playing board games? He said, you should be making these things. He's like, I'm going to have a local podcast, and I would be honored to have you on my podcast once you do make a game. And that was one of the last things I remember he said. I mean, I remember I laughed it off. I didn't take him seriously because, in all honesty, you know, we always joked around about going the next step, you know, not just playing, making things for people to have fun with.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, during the pandemic, he passes away.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember there were some things that he was tremendous at. And that was his laughter, his comedic timing. That's how he dealt with a lot of things he struggled with. And I just remember that I wanted that to be in the game. I wanted to make a game to be in memoriam for him, basically. And so I said, it definitely has to be comedic then, so that way it could have that influence of Ronnie McNutt. And then I also wanted to do something he enjoyed a lot, which is whenever we talked about philosophy or psychology, existentialism came up, you know, and cosmic horror and stuff like that. So I said, you know what, this game has to have cosmic horror in it to also give him kudos. And then I wanted to do something different, though, and say, let's do a little twist here. What if instead of making it the stereotypical modern day or 1920s cosmic horror, what if we put it in cyberpunk? What if we blended those two things together? So that way you have the epitome of mankind being technology, not even themselves, thinking that that's kind of like their god, if you will. But in reality, there's something even more mysterious, greater, and more frightening, the cosmic horror. So I thought it actually blended in pretty well. So that's all that to say, that's how I came up with the idea, you know, and I'm very thankful to him. He was the inspiration behind it, Ronnie McNutt. And this one's for him, brother. So, yeah.
And there was some, like when I was reading through the page, I'm going to show the page for those who are watching on the replay or live. And again, I'll put it out there. This, I mean, you funded, it's a small campaign, and that's okay. I think what I'd love to have on kind of as a profile on this podcast, and with the feedback I've had from a lot of people, is they really love the fact that we try to span the range as wide as possible. You know, 1 week you'll have someone on that's, you know, maybe has, I mean, 2 weeks ago we had the gamer profiling hit, I think it was 650,000 euros, right? Massive awesome. Game. And then you have, you know, games that are in a couple thousand dollars. And for me, what I think this really shows is the journey that people can go on, right? And my hope to people out there is the inspiration that as long as you have an idea, as long as you have an idea and you have the willingness to act on that idea, you can get started in this industry. And I think that, you know, the profile campaigns like this shows people exactly how it can be done, right? Print and play. You don't have to go make a physical game. So now you're selling basically the ideas, right? Obviously, you're going to have some artwork and so forth to go along with that. But the risk, you're patting yourself against all that risk and being able to kind of stick your toe in the water, right? And be able to test ideas and test market them and see this kind of feedback. And not only that, but also test the kind of Kickstarter environment. So I want to give you a kudos to that. I thought it was really, really cool. The artwork, you got to tell me where you came up with the artwork for this game. Like, it reminded me of like a 1980s video game almost.
Yes, that was kind of the vibes I was trying to go for. I was trying to get this whole, like, you know, campy, cheesy 1980s, yeah. Some retro. I love that stuff, man. That is my soul right there. Just being able to gun back to that, you know, it's all done pixel art, MS Paint and everything, just so that way I can still capture even how they used to make those type of games with those old programs. And yeah, man, the influence was just everything you mentioned. It's all the 80s and 90s retro gaming, retro movies, and the way they envision the future, right? The dystopia future that we might end up having and stuff like that. So I'm so glad it grabbed your attention, man. That's cool. that's cool.
And then when you're talking, I was reading through the campaign as well. What I noticed is that there's some things in there where you say, look, this is a simple setup. So I want you to talk about the setup in a second on how people can get into it, right? And then the other thing I thought was really cool is you had this kind of like the pain points, right? So you say, hey, does this bug you? Does this bug you? Does this bug you? Does this bug you? Well, you know, we've created something here that addresses those. And I, you know, anytime you're creating any product, period, if you can address the pain points, you have an inherent audience. You're going to be attracted to that thing that you're presenting, right? So let's get into that. So first, talk to me about this kind of how you easily can get into the system.
Yeah. So one of the first things that I think makes it very easy to get into the system is that if you can memorize like 4 or higher is your success, that means you basically learned majority of the game already. So that's already awesome for a newcomer. So that way you don't have to memorize, well, what does 18 dexterity mean? It actually means a +4 to your roll. And then you have to ask, why? That makes no sense. Why is an 18 a +4? None of that stuff going on here. What you see is you take a die, you roll it, you roll a 4 or higher, you succeed. You roll a 9 or higher, it's even better. So that's it. That's the whole game I just basically tossed to you right there as far as the system goes. So newcomers can just feel like I'm just jumping in and just having as much fun as I possibly can with it. So that's just one of the things that makes the game, I think, attractive to a newcomer. Also, I think the presentation of the game is going to make it easy too. So one thing you might notice for those who are actually watching, and you might see that the left page has an illustration on it and the right page just has a bunch of words. The reason being is that every left page of the book is strictly for illustrations and lore. It's for the artsy mind. If you like the idea of knowing the lore of a game and the rumors going on and the all that other cool fluff, left side of the page is going to be for you. Every right page is going to coincide with the left page, and it's basically just going to be only system. So when you're navigating through this whole book, you don't have to actually figure out what page you have to go on. It's always going to be right page for system, left page for illustrations and lore and stuff like that. So I'm feeding into either type of mindset, because you have power gamers who only care about the numbers and they just want to destroy everything. And then you have people who want to have a cool character who just interacts with the world in a very role play kind of way, right? And both ways to play the game are correct. There is no wrong way to play this game. It feeds into both players. So hopefully that helps a little bit into how accessible it is for people.
Now, when you talk about, you said, like, you know, do you hate waiting for character leveling and improvement at the end of a game session? So why do you hate that? And how do you fix that?
So I'm going to be honest. Some people don't get bothered by that, but I've heard a lot of people who have that trouble of saying, oh my goodness, I have to wait till the end of the game before I actually change anything about my character and update them, you know, upgrade them. And I think video games have fed us this cool idea of saying, why do you have to wait till the end of the session? You don't wait till the end of a session for a video game. You play the game for like an hour, your character levels up, you get really cool abilities, and you're constantly staying active and focused on the game because of it. So this game does the same exact thing. It says, no, you want fun? It's happening now. You just defeated the big baddie. You get your experience points and you level up now. You want to just drive around and have as much fun as possible and puzzle solve, get your experience points now. So that's the fun of this game. It's high reward, and it encourages you to have as much fun as possible immediately.
And you talk about loathing the calculating the weight and counting the currency. So is this something that you've run into that's been a bit of a thorn in your side when you're playing RPGs?
So I'll say this. So I personally didn't mind it all too much as a player, but what I noticed is, once again, other people would tell me and they'll say, oh my goodness, we don't even have enough room for this. I don't think, let me check my weight cost and my weight limit. And they'll have to multiply their strength times like 3, and they'll have to do all this math behind it. Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of math. That's why I made this. It's one of the reasons I made this game. I actually enjoy that process of die probabilities and all that stuff. But the truth of the matter is this, that's not every player. Most players want to jump in the game and just say, all right, I picked up this item, I'm going to have it just attached to myself. So what I did, once again, is I got influenced by outside sources, other board games and video games that say, why are you counting your weight? Why not just put it into an equipment slot instead? And then your character has an equipment piece. That just makes so much more sense for the idea of a role-playing game, where the idea behind it is just for you to be immersed into the world. And most people don't count weight while they're carrying stuff, you know? So, yeah.
And then you're talking about the hit point countdown. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so that was one thing. I wanted to make sure that if this game is going to have horror and psychological elements to it, that you're not just counting down hit points. Instead, you're counting down your like sanity and stuff like that, right? But for the most part, there's no hit points whatsoever. The way this game works is that when you get hit, you take a certain amount of damage. It's going to be a number. And all you have to know is you have to roll equal to or higher than the damage that you receive. So if you receive 4 damage, you roll a 4 or higher and you're fine, right? If you roll under the damage, you take a wound. You only have 1 wound. You take that another wound after you have a wound, your character's a goner. This game is lethal. I'm telling you, it's crazy. So it's fast paced. It's just about have fun. Do the coolest thing now, because you don't know if it's going to be the last moment for your character. It's less about longevity and more about legacy. How awesome was your character in the moment? And that was always the case with role-playing games. And I wanted to encapsulate that, because whenever we play a role-playing game, sometimes you play for like 6 hours back in the day when I was a kid, what have you, and you feel like a lot of that time you were just meandering. And then you would just have like these awesome moments scattered throughout, and you kind of had to wait for them. This game is not about that. This game is about having fun now.
What about the turn-based? So you're talking as well about like turn-based issues, right? Like with other games, are the more turn-based, and you kind of approach things a little bit different.
Yeah. So for example, even movement. So one problem with movement in pretty much anything turn-based, it's difficult to simulate the concept that really you're not taking turns in real life, right? So if you're driving a car, do you really have to wait for someone else to drive the car, right? And if you're faster than someone, are you always faster than someone, or do you slow down eventually because you run out of stamina? So instead of trying to make a very complicated system behind that, all I did was this. I said, you move three spaces flat, like a board game, right? Everyone does, with the exception that if you take your die and you roll that four or higher, you can move an additional space. And every five numbers over that, you move an additional space. So you never know how fast you're going to move that turn. It's going to allow for cinematic scenes, because that's one thing you sometimes don't get when you're playing other role-playing games that are mainstream. It's basically just like, my character moves 60 feet this turn, and I move 30 feet faster than you. You can't catch me. And it's like, no, that doesn't exist here. You can have actual chase scenes now. You can have parkour moments because you don't know how fast you're going to move. You don't know if you're going to make that jump and bounce off the wall. It's so fun and cinematic. Everyone who's playtested it for over 2 years now have said this is amazing how the movement works. It is a blast.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, we were saying, like, just for one hour, I said, hey, I don't play RPG. And you're like, oh, I'm going to convert you, man. I'm going to convert you. How do you convert somebody? So how do you get someone that's maybe in the industry? And obviously, if they're listening to this podcast, they're in the industry, but aren't necessarily playing RPGs. What do you say to somebody like that? How do you get them to kind of get in and you know, experiment with it?
I'll say this. Find somebody who is going to play the game as if it were a board game. So that is always the way that I pitch this to people. Who haven't played role-playing games before. There were a plethora of them, let me tell you. And I love that because it gets me excited. And I say, I get to introduce you to the reason why people love role-playing games. And so what I do is I kind of toss a little bit of the role-playing game elements aside. And I say, let's play this like a board game. Here's a scenario. Let's do fun stuff. Let's explode this vehicle, you know, over here. Let's drive this vehicle up the sides of a skyscraper or something cool like that, right? And let's just have a fun time with board gaming mechanics, which influenced this game in the first place. This game plays and feels like a board game. And so that's how I think you can lure people in, which is basically to say, hey, look, the truth of the matter is role-playing games are board games at their core. Gary Gygax, who founded Dungeons & Dragons, was a board gamer initially, a tabletop board gamer. And he says, what if we just take it a step further and add role-playing elements to it? So my advice to anybody listening here, or even you yourself, who wants to get into a cool role-playing game like Existential Central, I hope you try it one day. Maybe not. Would be, play it as if it were a board game. And then you get to actually determine if the game is actually fun or not, because hopefully the system itself stands the test of time and you will enjoy it as a board game. And then from then on, once you get comfortable, then you can start talking in funny voices and do, you know, dress up or whatever. That stuff comes later.
Yeah.
Just play like a board game first.
That's a good point. Where do you go from here? Like, are you going to stick on kind of the RPG train, or maybe this board game you had been working on before? Are you going to kind of pull that out of the, like, where what's the next step for you? Like, where do you go from here?
So I'm glad you asked that question, because the truth of the matter is I'm looking at board games too, man. Momo Dire, this company, is not settling on role-playing games only. We're here to make fun things. If it's creative, if it's fun, if it's going to make everybody have a great time together, that's where we're going to be investing in and creating for everyone. So look forward, everybody, to board games, card games, and maybe other role-playing games later down the road too. But we're not stuck in just one genre. I'm too much of a nerd and geek to stick in one genre.
How far down the road is that? Is that like a year from now? Is it 2 years?
So we actually do have some things in the work. I don't want to reveal too much. But we do have about two different concepts we're tossing between. I'm saying we're because my play testers are core to this company.
Yeah.
They help me determine what the next move is based off of their reaction to the games and how much fun they have. They say, oh, we're having a blast here. Then I'm like, okay, we got something to work with, right? So yeah, so like I said, we do have stuff in the works. It might be soon, within the next couple of years. Just keep up to date with us, man. I'm excited about it, just thinking about it, man. This is a, it doesn't stop here at Existential Central, even though it's a pretty awesome start.
Yeah. Well, for those who want to check out this campaign, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Simply just go to the notes and then you'll find a link there. Or you can go and type in Existential, which is a bit of a mouthful, on Kickstarter and find it there. But I think the easiest is probably just go on our show notes and click on the link. It'll take you straight to the campaign page. I'm also going to post a link to this interview as well in the Board Game Binge podcast Facebook group, private group. If you're not in it yet, please join it. Simply go to Board Game Binge podcast Facebook group and join us. And you can find the live replay there of this, and we'll also put a link there. Alexander, I want to wish you all the best in this campaign. I can't wait to see how this thing finishes off for you, man. I'm so excited. I'm gonna be cheering for you all the way along.
Appreciate you, man. James, it's been an honor, man. Thank you so much for having me on board here.
Take care, buddy. Cheers.
Stay blessed. Stay beautiful.
This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.